all along. It's a million faces in a mirror, and everyone belongs. Find your why. Join today at ymca.org for a better us.
The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley. Now we're in daylight saving, so spring is near. We've got a fantastic show. Welcome to the Kristen Bottle Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic show. Lots going on around the Delaware Valley. Of course, St. Patrick's Day is coming up.
Good morning, everyone. And the parade was yesterday, so.
It was.
Good morning to all of our paraders.
Right. Most of them are probably
right. Yeah, still sleeping. Right. From I was going to say. Yesterday.
This should be like at least some sort of a.
National holiday.
At least for anybody, you know, who went to the parade or something like that. But
yeah, it was a good day for parade. Chilly, but very sunny.
It was chilly.
Yes.
Today would have been a perfect day for it. But when you're Irish and or if you're celebrating St. Patrick's Day, it could be a blizzard. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It's always sunny.
Everyone's out there.
That's absolutely. So we have a great guest.
We do. I'm very excited.
So Wesley Cornish, the Cornerstone Legal Group. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing good today. Good to see you both.
Well, it's good to see you
as
well.
Thank you for being here, Wesley.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
It's good to be seen, of course, having said.
Absolutely.
If you would, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your career path, and the practice.
Oh, well, thanks. I used to work for the Temple Police for a while, and then I got into criminal law, and I've been bouncing around doing that, hitting the CJC for many years.
Local guy, Temple grad.
Oh, yeah. In and out of the courtrooms for much of my career. I've transitioned in the last few years. I've been doing a lot more justice advocating for childhood abuse victims a lot. That's kind of where my career is taking me now. Yeah.
That's important work.
Well, we've done a lot of shows on that, by the way. So, you know, it's a very emotional, really, in a sense, mind-boggling type situation.
Yeah, those are tough cases.
Well, they're tough to even talk about. But even,
right.
So, for example, when you look, and we're going to get into it, but when you look at the lists of cases, you're talking, you know, you talk the Catholic clergy, Boy Scouts, athletic coaches across, you know, the Jerry Sanduskys and Glenn Mills, which we're going to talk about there. I once had a conversation with an individual on air about this, and you know, you would think, you know, that as the laws get a little bit more sophisticated, things would, you know, be a little easier in this area. But what the answer back to me was, well, the criminals just get more sophisticated. They're getting, you know, you get a Jerry Sandusky starts his own nonprofit.
Yeah.
Does all kinds of things like that. You look at Larry Nassar, you look at all these situations, and it's crazy. What led you in that particular area?
Well, what happened was I was practicing criminal law as normal, and then, as you said, we're discussing Glenn Mills. I actually had a client reach out to me, and he was telling me about his experience there, and I was like, wow, that sounds horrible. But, you know, one person saying something to you, it's kind of more abstract. So I started speaking to some of my clients, and it was literally my clients who were asking me to take on this case about this institution. I never knew anything about it. And then when you look into it, it was really some horrible things that were going on there. And just the kind of person I am, you know, advocating for people who are wrongfully, you know, prosecuted. I couldn't sit there and watch children be abused this way and then not have an outlet, not have a voice to go after these adults who, you know, commit these atrocious actions on them.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things when you look, so to kind of take some of the confusion out of it, and I say, because people are listening, and the first thing I thought of is, what the heck does civil have to do with that?
Right.
Isn't that a criminal crime?
Right.
Well,
right.
Now I know.
It's a great.
I know that error, but if you would.
So what happens is there are criminal and civil parts of this. So what actually got the whole Glenn Mills case, when I say case, what got the whole Glenn Mills story going was a child had actually been abused there, and the staff member who had abused him was criminally prosecuted. And when that actually happens and somebody goes to jail, it starts, you know, creating a lot more news, a lot more buzz. And then when you kick over some of the rocks and you see what's actually going on in there, you realize there's a lot more than just one child who was horribly abused.
And I think that is important for listeners to know. You know, there are two separate claims when it comes to this type of situation. You know, so you were handling a lot of the criminal aspect, criminal defense aspect in your world. And then you're getting these calls. Well, there's a civil action against the school
itself. The negligence of the school for for allowing predators to prey on children that you know, that they're supposed to be protecting.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, going back to what you were saying earlier about part of how I got into it is that when a lot of the people I would defend criminally, they were before the courts, the criminal courts, because they had drug abuse issues and such. Right. And when you actually get down and you dig into, like, why do you have this issue? What's really going on? It always stems from they were trying to numb the abuse that they had suffered at these facilities, especially a place like Glenn Mills. And you just sit there and you just hearing stories that just go down from the alcoholism to failed relationships and such. And it's just it's something that you can't look away from once you actually say it. It's
crazy that it comes full circle. I was just going to say
it's a cycle.
Yeah.
And by the way,
that's so sad.
That's society right there. In other words, you live in an abusive home. You look at that cycle of abuse generation after generation after generation, and so it certainly, you know, it makes sense. It's very difficult, and it's
important work, you know.
Well, and right now, it's on the front pages. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like look at the Boy Scouts. I'm a Catholic, so when the Pope came to town, I thought it was vital that the Pope stood up and talked about it, and he did.
As a Catholic, I have major insane issues with that whole situation. I think everyone in my family knows that I am very, very, very avid on that entire situation.
Of course. Yeah. Oh yeah. No doubt. Well, I mean, for years you heard, and it was weird with the Catholic, Church, they would just send, they would just transfer somebody. But at that point, I'm thinking to myself, who could just transfer somebody? This was somebody we knew. That son of a gun would be in jail, and the key would be thrown away, hopefully. But in the Catholic Church, they were just transferring them. And I'm thinking to myself, how big is the Catholic Church that they can actually do that?
Oh, well, they actually affect laws being passed, like evidentiary laws being passed in the states and whatnot.
I mean, if you want a good corollary to that, it's not just with the Catholic Church passing priests. Think about how it is when a lot of, regardless of what people's politics are, a lot of the last few years where you hear police were committing malfeasance at one department and going to another without being scanned. The same was happening
everywhere.
It was well, the same thing happens at these placement schools as well, where somebody comes in, they abuse a kid, then the school doesn't want liability. Same way the Catholic Church or somebody else doesn't want liability.
They want liability. They don't want bad press.
Nope. So they send them away, and then this person gets sent on to another community. Nobody really knows what to expect. I mean, it's a really bad practice. I do have to say, though, regarding the Catholic Church, I think this Pope has been taking the abuse claims a lot more seriously than the last few have.
I respect that, too. And I think he needs to. I think, as a fellow Catholic, I do. I think that's...
Well, when he came to Philly, I was thinking to myself, this is like the 10,000-pound elephant in the room. Like, in other words, we're all okay. And he brought it up. He don't bring that up. We're a bunch of idiots, right?
Right.
I mean, in other words, are we stupid? I mean, we're all thinking about it. Let's hear it. And he did. He brought it up. And that was important to acknowledge and bring it up.
And I think that it's a really, really difficult conversation. It's a very sensitive issue. It's widespread, these issues that are happening. It's, like you said, it's not just with the Catholic Church. It's not just with the Boy Scouts. I mean, that's what's, you know, on the front pages. That's the big news. But unfortunately, it's everywhere. And it comes back to that whole, it comes back to that whole concept of corporations, organizations. What stops this from happening? What stops just negligence from happening? What ensures safety? It happens in the courtroom. And people do, and that's why your work is so important, because you're advocating for the little guy. You're advocating for the kids.
Well, I would have to say one of the things, and Joe, this goes back to your point earlier about saying like these predators, we're so much more advanced in 2022. How are these predators able to do this?
Yeah.
And it's because ultimately with certain kinds of crimes, like say hit and run or robbery, that's a different motivation there. With crimes where you're preying on children, especially those kind, the people who are doing this are very selective. They groom these children. They siphon them off. And they're not just picking on any children. They're picking on children, at least in situations where I represent them, children coming from broken homes, children running away from abuse, children who, even if they wanted to disclose what happens to them, they don't really have an adult or somebody to go to in their life. And these people, the reason, at least with places like Glen Mills and Devereux, Devereux Advanced Behavioral Health, at least the reason why abuse there goes on so long and it's not noticed, at least part of the reason, is because of just who the victims are who were selected.
Yeah, and you could take it even into foster care. You mentioned the police situation. The reason I say, you know, and there's a little bit of a parallel there, but common sense would tell you that they can get, I mean, in other words, you know, you're calling them. And they're, you know, they can you know, push the crime to the side. When you're a priest or somebody like that, you're not in control of the books. Like, in other words, you know, you can't bury anything. In other words, when law enforcement's on you, I want to know why they can't get you. Yeah. I'm being sarcastic, and I don't really mean this, but if my buddy committed a crime, I might push that down if I'm a cop, and you wouldn't be able to track it. But you're a priest. You're somebody else. How are you getting away? In other words, I'm the one with the records and the reports. Okay, I'm not saying that a policeman's doing it. I'm just being hypothetical. But what I'm saying is, to me, that really, really, and I meant that specifically for the Catholic Church. Like, how the hell these are individuals with documented crimes, and they just send them somewhere else. Whoa, 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 whoa. If I'm the detective on that, I'm going and getting you. I don't care if you go into some baptism, you know.
Here's the thing. If you look into it, and I'm sure, you know, Wesley will back me up on this, the issue is they're so powerful, they're so big, that they've gotten away with it because they're paying people off. They're making sure that certain things are not found out. It's very scary.
Right.
Let's say that.
I'm not saying it obviously about all the Catholic Church. There's a lot of great people who've 100%. Taken the brunt of this, but I'm talking about the scumbags. That's all. You know, I'd like to state it a little bit nicer, but I just can't. And I'm not allowed say certain words on the radio, so I can't say it worse. But I think everybody gets it. Yeah. I've got a lot of great. I went to Catholic school for my entire life, except 1 year. And let me say this. You know, I had great experiences in a lot of areas, but those individuals that are doing the molesting and doing those things, put everybody else who is doing the right thing, you know, did I say a shadow would be the understatement of the century.
I mean, I want to say I went to Catholic school as well, and I had a great experience there. I never, a lot of the stuff that comes up, I think it's truthfully the very small minority of the Catholic Church, but to on point to answer your question, a big part of the reason why, at least in Pennsylvania, priests and other people have gotten away is because of statute of limitations.
Yeah.
So the statute of limitations in Pennsylvania basically gives these victims a very, very short period of time to file a lawsuit. Even the police, they're handicapped by how long they have to be able to go after and actually conduct an investigation, arrest somebody. And we're not talking about... When you're talking about a sex crime or child sex abuse, unless there's like child pornography or videos made, there's no real evidence other than the child speaking to an adult. So, I mean, it's not like you can get a tape or you can get like DNA. I mean, it's very incredibly difficult to bring these cases. And on top of it, and this sounds horrible, but it's a big part of the reason why a lot of these offenders get away. It's the last thing you want to do is to traumatize and re-traumatize a child just to put somebody in the jail when in reality we're concerned. You have to be most concerned with what the child's health care is. But I would go with it. The statute of limitations in Pennsylvania is one of the biggest issues. In Jersey, for instance, they just passed a law where they gave a 2-year look back window. So what that means is anybody who was sexually abused, sexually assaulted, regardless of their age, had 2 years from the date that law passed to bring a claim, and the state waived the statute of limitations. That was going to happen last year in Pennsylvania. But Kim Ward, who is one of the heads of our state Senate, has been pushing that down. She receives a lot of funding from the insurance companies. And ultimately the insurance companies are the people who have to pay off these, you know, these cases, these settlements, these verdicts. So, I mean, it's a combination in between of it. But, if you really want change, if you really want to be able to hold these people responsible, I mean, the first thing you could do is you change the statute of limitations. I'll tell you, you could go back and get these priests.
What is the statute of limitations?
So the statute of limitations, simply put, is that after an event happens.
No, I know that, but what is the, I mean, isn't there like 20 years? What?
So the statute of limitations, actually how it works is that it depends. So when a new law gets passed, sometimes the law applies to conduct that happened way before, and sometimes it doesn't. So a lot of the times now, the statute of limitations are longer, but it's only for crimes that happened in, like, say, 2017 or after. So a lot of the times you'll have a serial offender who committed crimes in the 80s and the 90s, and the law changes, but it can't go back and apply to them, at least criminally, because it would basically take their rights away.
It would take their rights away that they took for somebody else. Can you call some of your boys up and go rough them up? There's no statute of limitation on that.
And I think I think Wesley's bringing up a good point that me and a lot of my fellow colleagues like to tell our friends and family, look, you know, again, the change is in the courtroom, but it's also in lobbying to have the laws change, because the legislation is, they only let you go so far, as Wesley's saying. So we have, for example, I'm a part of, it's the Pennsylvania Association for Justice. They have lobbyists who are in Harrisburg trying to push for laws to be passed that help people, help injured people, help children, you know, extend the statute of limitations. There are a lot of states that are doing that now, where they're changing the statute of limitations in these sex abuse cases to accommodate, you know, a lot of adults, or a lot of children rather. It's 2022. So medicine has expanded. You know, we know a lot more about psychology and traumatic or trauma, you know, childhood trauma. Yeah. The trauma is pushed back. You know, they suppress that trauma.
Right. And so, and, I mean, Wesley, you mentioned, though, that in your investigations in representing individuals, you've seen, I mean, obviously, you see this is a cyclical thing. And so people this happens to them, and it continues to go on and on and on. And these types of situations are, it's the ultimate. I mean, it's the ultimate in betrayal to a young person, but probably the person who's doing it was done to them, and so it's unforgivable. I mean, there's any, you know, throwing the key away. To me, let's pay some bills, and we're going to come back and talk more with Wesley Cornish, and of course we'll have more from the Kristen Bottle Show after the break.
Suffering a work injury or any type of personal injury can be a painful and traumatic experience. What can make it even more difficult for a patient is trying to navigate and find the quality medical care they need for their particular injury. Healthmark Enterprises is a full-service medical coordination and marketing company started in 1994 by CEO Robin Lewison that takes all the worry and complications out of treatment for a work or personal injury. From coordinating full-service medical treatment with a top medical professional professionals, providers, and specialists to overseeing patient compliance and providing one-on-one personalized communications with clients. HealthMark Enterprises handles the entire treatment process for injured workers and those suffering personal injuries so they can just concentrate on getting better. HealthMark Enterprises believes that being injured should not limit one's access to great medical care. Now, more than ever, an injured person needs an advocate on their side. Contact HealthMark Enterprises at 215-563-1315. That's 215-563-1315. HealthMark Enterprises. Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Kristen Bottle Show. Kristen's guest.
Hello, everyone.
Is Wesley Cornish.
Hey, guys.
And there are some women out there, but, you know, they don't, they don't typically listen to me, so. Real quick, having said that, you know, talking.
Wesley's getting hazed today.
He's doing fantastic.
He's doing a great job.
I wouldn't
great
expect
sport.
Anything less.
It's a good sport.
Wesley, what should somebody do if they or a loved one. But, you know, I mean, let's look at this. But if there's something going on or they suspect something's going on with a loved one, how do you start, you know, if somebody's, you know, being abused, how does somebody, you know, do something about this?
Well, I
especially
mean,
if they don't have, like you said, the credibility, they're in a vulnerable situation as it is.
So now, at least now, because a lot of the stuff that happened with Penn State, a lot of the horrible stuff around Jerry Sandusky, who... Yeah. And as a criminal defense lawyer, say it deserves every day of his sentence.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
As horrible as that is, the measures were put in place so children now have access to something called Childline. And what that is when you go to any of these facilities like Devereux or Glen Mills, these are essentially prisons. So they have to follow certain kinds of rules at a prison. So there have to be they have to provide contact information and such. And one of them is for what's called the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and part of that is being able to call into the child line to be able to report anonymously any abuse that's happening, to report abuse that's happening to other people, anything that you saw. That's one way. I would say, I mean, I know it's hard because of what we're talking about, but, I mean, if somebody's out there listening, especially somebody who's younger, even if somebody is an adult now who suffered that when they were younger, I would say – to reach out first to somebody that you trust. I mean, if it's ongoing, you need to reach out to somebody that you can trust if you can. Otherwise, if you're older now and it's something that you went through, I think, you know, whether it's me or anybody else, you should reach out to an attorney and talk about your options because, you know, time truthfully is limited. And, you know, even though a person, and I know this sounds harsh to say, even though a person may be going through tough emotions at that point, it's important that they reach out to a lawyer or somebody so that they can make sure at least that their rights are protected should they want to do something later on. Or at least know that, hey, I may not want to deal with this issue at 22, but I have another 7 years to think about this, know what I want to do, and be able to, like, when I'm 28, I can file a lawsuit or such.
And the statute of limitations, just how many years again would that be in Pennsylvania?
So in Pennsylvania, if you were physically abused as a child, just physically abused, not sexually abused, which is horrible. It's only till you're 20, and that should definitely be changed. If you're sexually abused while you're a minor in Pennsylvania, you have till the age of 30
okay.
to file a lawsuit.
And we talk about if this is, first of all, just thinking about somebody going through that right now and not being able to do something for 8 years, call into the broadcast. I'll tell you that right now. We'll make somebody famous. That's a fact. That's a, you know, yeah. But also evidence. Like if somebody's going through this, they've got to get, you know, like you said, if there's no witnesses, you know, some kind of evidence. I mean, you know, if you're in a home, you know, listen, there are kids out there that have had horrible lives and are perpetual liars. That's a perfect setup right there. Some scumbag can see that. No one will believe this kid. Right. He's got personality issues.
Vulnerable kids are taking advantage.
That's
of
right.
Day.
So how about, you know, get, you know, kind of documenting evidence. I mean, having, you know, talk about that, and, you know, and you know, how that would at least help an attorney.
Well, I mean, it's a factor. I mean, a lot of my clients are in prison right now who are doing it. I could say this on air. I can't say the gentleman's name, but I represent somebody on death row in Pennsylvania who went to one of these institutions, and I didn't know he was on death row until we had gotten into, you know, really going over his case. But a lot of his anger, a lot of what happened came from there. I mean, from his experience, and he had went to Glen Mills. He was severely abused there, physically abused, and then he went out and killed somebody. I mean, he escaped from Glen Mills and he did it. So, I mean, it's really hard. I mean, I think what could be done to really help these kids is kind of, there needs to be another party involved, and there needs to be some kind of monitor. And I'm not talking about a probation officer or a parole officer, but somebody who really goes in and intensely, maybe a social worker, monitors these schools a lot more, goes in, makes sure these kids aren't being abused. I mean, one of the things, Joe, and this is something that's just crazy, but I would be remiss if I didn't talk about it a little bit, is when you talk about how these kids are controlled, there's something called a home pass. And this goes for every facility across Pennsylvania that I represent people in, where these adults who run it, and sometimes it's women who run the facilities at like Devereaux who would commit sex abuse. Sometimes it's men at Glen Mills or Devereaux or whatever other facility. But the children, after a certain amount of time at these facilities, they've earned credit to be able to go home. And it's totally determined by the staff members. So the staff members, to be able to abuse these kids or to get whatever they want out of them, will hold these home passes over them and threaten to revoke them. And then if they revoke the home pass, threaten to tell their probation officers. So, I mean, it becomes really difficult in how to have a kid who's like a compulsive liar, you would say, or somebody from a bad background, be able to reach out to somebody. I think there needs to be something put in by the system so there is another person besides just calling a phone number
to report abuse. There needs to be hope for these kids that are being I can't even – it's disgusting. It's horrifying. It's like
horrible.
A horror. It really is. And it's a cycle. It's cyclical. I can't – I mean, the fact this guy, your client, went out and killed somebody. And really, if you think about it, of course he has personal responsibility, but at the same time, he was abused in a state. Was it at Devereaux or was he at Glen Mills?
He was at Glen Mills, but at the end of the day, even if they're private facilities, so called in quotes, they still are. Still the Department of Health and other units of the Pennsylvania government and federal government have oversight over them the same way as if we went to University of Pennsylvania Hospital because we got in a car accident. You know, there's still oversight by the government in there.
Right, and these kids are still getting abused. I mean, it's so sad because I know there's lack of funding, lack of, you know, employees, things of that nature. I mean, everything plays into it. But who are the victims? The children.
Absolutely.
It's terrible.
Well, there's not really a lack of funding when it comes to places like Devereaux and Glen Mills. Those kind of places are incentivized. You have to think of them almost more on a private prison kind of continuum where they get money by having the beds filled. So they don't want the beds to ever not be filled. And the government always has enough money to send people there.
That blows my mind.
At least with those kind of facilities, I don't think it's a lack of funding. I think it's a lack of oversight in controlling your employees.
So you got that. By the way, that's part of the lawsuit right there.
Well, right. And that for the listeners, you know, that is how do you get these private facilities who are being paid and they're worrying about their bottom line.
Well, Glen Mills is no longer open, right?
So Glen Mills, the facility.
They're trying to open. I heard something.
So, of course.
Wesley, by the way, the best way to operate on the show is just to agree with me, even if I'm completely wrong. The proper answer is You're right, Joe. I don't think it is, but you're right. Go ahead. You're just kidding.
Well, to give you a typical lawyer answer, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
I'm joking.
I'm messing with you. So,
Glenn, messing with me.
So Glenn Mills is actually, yes, the school itself, the issues that we're talking about, that part of it's closed. The facility is actually open and making money because they're operating as a COVID overflow hospital for a while, and they're hosting other events. Now, the new there's a new group of owners who want to or a new group of people who are trying to get a license to try to reopen Glenn Mills. My personal opinion, I don't think that facility should ever be open again for any reason from anybody. But, you know, especially what happened. But there is a new group of people. There were a lot of recommendations put out by the Pennsylvania Auditor General about what to do better. They're trying to comply with them. I just think that's a facility that needs to be shut down, and everybody kind of needs to move on.
Well, and again, how do you know, it's very similar to big corporations that, you know, don't put certain that could easily put in certain safety measures when it comes to maybe their truck drivers.
Well,
or
you said it,
whatever.
Though. You said it, though. The court change happens in the courtroom.
Change happens in the courtroom.
They get bit in the butt.
How do you make a corporation, a private corporation like that, change their policy and care in the courtroom when they get hit with a giant verdict?
Have because their insurance company pay.
Exactly. Because, right, when Wesley goes in and it's a verdict.
Absolutely.
I mean.
But let's take it a step farther. How do you value these cases? Somebody comes in.
My God.
You know, you have a situation, you know, they've been molested. There's negligence, obviously. A particular organization has left the door open, has not screened their employees, and now you have child molesters in there taking advantage of kids that are just vulnerable, and that kid's life is, I don't know how you put a value on a life, because then they end up, you know, potentially killing somebody else. By the way, I'm dead serious when I say this. The person who was killed by the client you were talking about should be able to sue also.
Yes.
But having said that, how do you value? So you get a call from somebody, they've been molested, they were at one of these institutions. How do you, and then you go, so let's just say they meet the statute of limitations. Let's just take this for a second. Number one, before we go into the value, how do you handle it? It's confidential, right?
Always.
And how do you do it? You prepare yourself in a sensitive way because these are, you know, you're a lawyer. You're a great lawyer, yeah. and you're awesome in the courtroom, and I wouldn't want to be on the other side from you if I was a shameless insurance lawyer. But guess what? That doesn't mean that doesn't mean that you're sensitive and prepared to take calls like that, because I imagine, you know, it would, you know, the sensitivity, but you do, and you're good at it. Talk about prepping for that call out of the blue.
So most of my clients right now are in some form of prison. So they're either in prison or they're in halfway house or jail. So a lot of times I actually don't get to talk to them on the phone. It's secondhand through family members and such.
Yeah.
When I do talk to the people who aren't in jail and I talk to them on the phone, when they call in, I usually, when I talk to them, I ask them, like, you know, literally what facility you're at. And I was like, look, I don't want to talk to you about all those details. I know you don't want to talk about all those details. So I actually send them paperwork and I say, write it out. And it's kind of like, I know it sounds silly, like writing a high school homework assignment.
That don't sound silly at all. It makes it easier for them.
Yeah.
To express themselves and then tell the story from their point of view.
And it could take as long as they want, as many pages. And then I go, and then what I'll do is once I read what they wrote, and a lot of times people do write a lot, I will go back and I'll ask them specific parts about some of the stuff they wrote. Usually I don't try to get into talking too much with the people. Sometimes though, especially parents whose children are still in some of these facilities, because not all of them are shut down, when they call up, that's a different call. And then it becomes more of a triage situation of, okay, when were they last abused? Is this physical, sexual abuse? Have you reported it to somebody? How do we work on getting your child out of there?
Well, I was gonna say, what if it's going on now?
Well, yeah, as sometimes the problem is, a lot of these places, they're like prisons where you can't just go in and check your child out. Like a court would need to, come in and put an order.
How long does it take to get that court order?
It depends. It depends on the situation, but it depends on what county it is too. If it's Delaware County, it'll get done a lot quicker than say if it's Philadelphia, because there's a lot more people, but it can get done. It'd be an emergency petition. And I have to say the trial courts are pretty receptive when those kind of petitions come through.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, they're a lot more receptive than the normal, I want an extra weekend with my child, I don't want my spouse to have an extra weekend.
Right,
they're more receptive when it comes to these kind of issues.
Oh my God, so tough.
Okay, and having said that, let's talk about how you would, this is a civil situation, so it's a two-part situation. Somebody gets arrested for molesting somebody, now, and it's a situation where an organization was negligent, allowed that person to prey on somebody else. How do you value that case in a civil manner?
Okay, so when you look at it, there's a million factors to go into actually valuing a civil case such as that. But the biggest factor I do, and I will not accept a client and I won't work with somebody, is that I have to be able to, same way I'm looking at you guys and have a conversation, I have to be able to have a conversation with them. And I have to believe the words that are coming out of my client's mouth. And I can tell you, surprise, surprise, doing criminal law a lot of times, people lie, including your clients sometimes.
And that's so tough. I get that.
But let's assume they're not lying.
No, obviously. But I'm saying, the fact is, if I sit down with a person and I believe them, then that's where the value starts. Because I'm sure Kristen and any other lawyer could tell you, if your client isn't believable, regardless of their background, regardless of who they are, if you can't believe what they're saying to you, then you're going to have an uphill road. And once I believe a person at that point, there's generally, the insurance companies did this, there's generally different levels of abuse for rape versus groping or fondling versus other kinds of abuse, whether it happened one time versus, multiple times, serially. So those are all factors to go in. But like, for instance, whenever we file a lawsuit, we never actually ask for a dollar amount. We just state we want this to be a jury determination, because honestly, Joe, I don't know what the right number to ask is for, losing your innocence from the age of 14 for the rest of your life. So I don't
let's think about the damages.
That's so terrible.
Let's think about the damages. Somebody's entire life of potential, their emotional well-being forever. Let me give you a little insight on this. You want me on that jury. The answer is they don't have enough money, but let's give them 50 mil and let's go get an extra. I'm just saying, think about this for a second. I thought about this just in my own case. And we're all in life, everybody has some regrets, okay? And, you wish that A, B, C, or D did or didn't happen. I wish I didn't fumble against Monsignor Bonner, right? I'm saying, right? Or Cardinal O'Hara, right? My point is this. That's enough. I mean, that might, the fact of the matter is this. And I'm being
lucky. You're lucky that that's your word.
That's right. I mean, think about individuals that are walking around that have no other options in their life and had their innocence and their situation taken away from them from some scumbag who probably had it taken away from them and so on. Imagine what that value would be. Like, they make, like you said, Wesley, some client they get into drugs, they're trying to cover it up. How does, give me an example of like juries, how they typically, put those damages together.
Well, I mean, you're looking at all kinds of damages. You're looking at damages for how much they could have worked in their life. Also, you got to remember, when you're getting physically abused at these institutions, you're not getting an education. And these kids, part of why they're sent there is to get an education too. So, I mean, imagine not only just getting your butt kicked for years and years and years, but then not having any education or, knowledge
PTSD.
That came along with it.
You can't, you probably can't learn.
Well, that, and you're not in there becoming a productive member of society when you get out. That's what it's for. That's what it's meant to do.
Well, yeah, and I can say
rehabilitation.
I can say one thing, and this is just a side note, but I know at Glenn Mills, they weren't really educating the children. They were putting them in front of TV all day and telling them to put in VHS tapes and watch them. So
it's terrible.
But that right there is like one of our claims, is that these kids were deprived of an education. They were, obviously, the injuries from whether they had broken bones or such, the psychological injuries. And you also have to remember, a lot of times, with these kind of cases, it's almost impossible to gauge how much, unless you were an actual victim, unless someone's an actual victim of that kind of an act, it's really hard to put a number on it. I mean, you have to ask a jury, and you have to look at a jury, and you have to tell them these are the factors.
Are they typically class action or mass tort type situations where, if it's a Catholic Church type thing, I know they have specific type. I don't know if they do it on an individual basis, but are these mostly either mass or the individual? In your cases, if it's a Glenn Mills type, situation. These are individual lawsuits or they group lawsuits?
Okay, so there's a slight difference. There's class actions, there's mass torts, then there's individuals. So, for instance, Devereaux, that's a class action lawsuit. Glenn Mills, that's a mass tort. And with the Catholic Church, I believe it was done slightly different in every state, but some of the states it was class action, some of it was mass tort. But essentially, with these kind of cases, it usually starts out individually because you don't really know. Like with Glenn Mills, when I started doing it, I didn't really know. I was sitting on top of like a whole reservoir of thousands of people.
Right.
So it started out as one or two or three people. But then when I'm getting 100, 200 calls a day from people about this, I must have had total, before the law changed, there was a law that went back and restricted. It was a ruling by the Supreme Court in the Rice case that restricted the statute of limitations. I had maybe about 3,000, 3,500 clients just for Glenn Mills that had went through this. And I mean, we're talking about this. There were maybe about 2,000 or 3,000 people a year who went to Glenn Mills. So I wasn't even scratching the surface of the amount of people. But I mean,
what did you do in that point? In other words, that's enough. 1 year's worth of cases is enough for like almost a lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the problem is, though, you realize that when you guys say it's cyclical, I'm going to add something to it. It's not just cyclical to the one person.
Right.
It's cyclical to the whole community around them, because how I was meeting these people and how I was coming in contact was, I went to Glenn Mills. I went to Devereaux. I got abused. I came from a broken household. You know who else went there? My brother, my cousin, my neighbor.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, they have brothers, they have sisters. And then you're realizing, when you start looking at where is everybody's address, where are people living, you start seeing dotted with the communities, and those are the same communities where they're not getting great services, like Kensington, parts of North Philly, where there's food deserts, where they don't have, supermarkets and stuff. Yeah, it becomes very obvious. You overlay the map, you're looking at the places in town that have some of the highest crime, places in the country that have some of the highest crime that go there.
Yeah, no, so if you were to track them, it's almost, what you would call it, but where people go who have been abused and have had issues with life and are downtrodden, for one reason or the other, they kind of, push to those areas. Talk about the burden of proof when somebody either comes in your office, but also what you have to provide in regards to when you say, okay, I have a client here that obviously was corroborating sort of a lot of other types of stories in the same facility. What is the burden of proof for them to file a case and then to win?
I mean, in reality, I mean, legally, there's a ton of ways that we could sit there and could describe burden of proof, burden of persuasion, all that stuff. But ultimately, when you're doing these kind of cases, what it really comes down to, the burden of proof is what I said earlier about your client having believability.
Okay, believability.
Because if your client is believed, and it's a case like this, this isn't something like a slip and fall or something like where they're like, okay, maybe it's this, maybe it's not. If a jury believes your client was sexually abused, there's no more conversation at that point.
No doubt.
It becomes how much are they paying?
100%. But if somebody's sexually abused, there's a good chance that they know a lot of other people that were sexually abused also. Now, getting them to state, or at least one, or a couple, or a handful of, what was that movie? I forget the movie, where it was exactly about, I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was an incredible, Robert De Niro was a priest in it, and the kids in it
were abused, and he was not a molester. He was somebody who took their back,
right?
And understood, and they got one of them to admit it. But having witnesses or knowing other people that went through it,
that's got to be difficult to get witnesses, right?
Well, I mean, it depends. Usually, so what it is when it comes to physical abuse, everybody knows everybody else is getting physically abused because they're watching these other kids get
beat
butts.
Up. Yeah, yeah.
They're watching their butts get kicked. The one thing about the sexual abuse is that people knew what was going on. Let me put it this way. When it was adult males abusing the male students there, it was known that happened, but nobody really knew it happened like that. Now, with Devereaux, it was a little different because there were more female staffers. So sometimes the female staffers were openly having sexual relations with the male students, and that wasn't as well hidden, but it wasn't, for whatever reason, it wasn't reported the same way. So in that situation, maybe, but a lot of times when it was like the priests or male sexual abuse,
the kids were not easy to talk about.
People didn't really know about it. It was more hidden. It wasn't something that was ever really put out there. It wasn't bragged about. I mean, you're also bringing in to the conversation, a lot of times these are 12, 13, 14-year-old kids who are going through puberty. Yeah. I mean, they don't know if they like boys, girls. They don't really know what's going on
there.
They're
confused anyway.
And then to have an adult, even if they're straight, have an adult male, molest them,
especially in a vulnerable situation. Yeah. I'm assuming, and it makes so much sense, that they obviously don't want to talk about it. They're not going to talk about it with, often probably don't want to. So I get it.
Want to talk to a man either about it a lot of times.
Oh, absolutely.
Know? I mean, that's really embarrassing to them.
I was just going
to
say, do you run into that
all the
issue?
Time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it comes to, Kristen, you know what it's like working in this field. You got to talk to people.
Yeah, because I have that issue sometimes too. Sometimes men actually, male clients would rather prefer to talk to a male client. Mm-hmm. Some of them specifically ask for a female at the firm because I have a lot of clients that say, nope, the female attorneys, they're just more observant and they pick up on the small details.
But you know what? It's interesting though.
But this is a different, I mean, this is heavy, heavy,
but
heavy.
Sometimes.
That's why I asked you about that answering the phone. Like, you know, that sensitivity, that trust that you have to build because some people have, even if they met the burden of, say, think about this for a second, 28-year-old guy, okay? It happened 10, 15 years ago, 15 years ago, okay? This guy, you know, 28, to me, you know, like when you're 21, 28 is old, but when you're 57, 28 is a kid.
Yeah,
and that kid may not want to, it still may be very difficult for that individual to bring that up, and they don't even know you. Now, you have a great, sort of demeanor. But that's why I was asking you how important you got. You cannot afford not to be on your game. You could be in the middle of arguing with your partner or the AT&T guy because the phones are going down, and all of a sudden you get a call like this. And guess what? You got
to
be on because this is somebody who may have taken 15 years to have this conversation.
Well, I can say my partner's great like that. She actually helps me out constantly with folding forms, getting everything out. So she has been insanely supportive. Thank you, Mom.
Tell us what you really think about it. That's great.
No, I love it.
You know what I mean. No.
But ultimately, I'm lucky in that way. So when I actually finished law school, I started my own firm right out of school.
Great.
And the only person who helped me do it was my mom,
who
ended up becoming a paralegal. We trained her. She went to school and everything for it. So when we have those kind of calls where somebody's like, it's really sensitive or they would just prefer to talk to
That's
a female.
Awesome.
So my mom, old Italian lady, she listens great.
Is she listening
shout
now?
Out to mom.
She is.
So what's your mom's name?
Hope Cornish.
Shout out to Hope.
You raised a good man.
You guys
here.
Are doing the good work, honestly. You know, this type of work, I tell people all the time, you know, my job is very rewarding because I'm able to help people. You are doing heavy work that's helping children. I mean, really, this is like, I have the highest respect for what you do because I don't know that I could do it day in and day out. I've had these calls, and that's not really our wheelhouse, you know. So we really, you know, we refer, we get them to somebody who does this day in and day out, like you, exactly, you know. So I just can't imagine. It's so heavy. I can't imagine doing that day in and day out.
Yeah, it's.
I have so much respect.
It takes
what
a special
you do.
Type of person to do it. Wrongful death. Suicide.
And in this, you know, in this particular area, you know, you're in a situation where I may take a shot at it, but it must be prevalent.
Yeah, that I would say drug abuse, suicide, future criminality, like thefts, like that kind of stuff. Very, very, very prevalent. Much happens. Yeah, very prevalent, very high instance of it. Yeah. The one sad thing, too, is that when somebody does commit suicide, unless they left in, like, a suicide note, and I'm not joking, I'm being serious, unless they left, I'm doing this because whoever, Glenn Mills or Devereaux or whatever police abused me and I'm killing myself for this, usually that's the best news that the insurance companies and these defendant facilities can happen, because with a case like this, it's not written on paper. The only way that Glenn Mills or Devereaux is held responsible is that person comes in and testifies against them and points them out and does it. And if that person can't do it, then the facility is able to say, well, I had nothing to do with it. I didn't know about it. And those are not even real claims. The person's not here to make them. And that's a lot of people. And, you know, the sad thing is, when I was telling you I had, before the law changed, when I had about, you know, 3,000, 3,500 clients, I lost a number of them during dependency of that. So we're talking during a two-year period. I must have lost about 7 or 8 of them. And we're talking murder, a few overdosing, and they were all under the age of 23. And I'm thinking, because I represent people in their 70s, 80s on there, I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be some guy who's like 85. I'm like, oh, my God, sorry. But, you know, no, it was everybody was under 23. It was absolutely heartbreaking, heartbreaking.
And you know, when you think about that, you know, it's just, you know,
it makes me angry.
And many people failed these people. Our heart goes out to them. Want to get one thing kind of clear on this, Wesley? Is this a contingency fee type of situation?
Absolutely, I would never take money from anybody. The only way I would split money is if I actually won their case out and did it for them. The last thing I'm going to do is have somebody pour their heart out like this and then be like, "All right, now give me some money." Like, no,
yeah, no.
But having said that, explain what the contingency fee agreement is. So, because some people are sitting there going, "Well, I could never afford an attorney like Wesley." But that's not true.
So what a contingency fee is essentially says that you don't have to pay for anything unless the attorney gets some kind of recovery for you, which could be settlement, a jury verdict, something of that. So that means that also the contingency fee, the attorney will be responsible for fronting all the costs, such as like a filing fee, such as getting experts, anything like that to make the case go forward. So if somebody actually has a claim, or somebody actually was at one of these facilities, and it's not just limited to Devereaux and Glenn Mills, if they were at any juvenile placement, just pick up the phone and call an attorney.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you this, it doesn't have to be me. Pick up the phone and call an attorney, and I would like it to be me, but ultimately...
Well, call me, and I will get you over to Wesley right away. Absolutely.
Oh, that can work, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, having said that, you've been an awesome guest.
Thank you.
You know,
yeah, this was a heavy topic. This was very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Contact information for yourself at the firm.
Okay. My name is David Wesley Cornish. I'm at Cornerstone Legal Group. You can reach us at 212-444-2039. And we're on the web at cornerstonelegalgroup.com.
Now, did you say 212?
Yep.
That's a New York number.
It is, because it goes through my cell phone. I'm barred in New Jersey as well as Pennsylvania, Texas, the Northern District of Florida, Colorado, North Dakota, and Illinois.
Well, what's the most important thing is you're an Eagles fan, and that's all we really care about.
Hold on. I would have to say I'm the biggest Eagles fan in this room. I'm the only one who has the Philly special tattooed on me.
Oh, yeah. You were already at the top.
Right. Yep,
on
that's
the top
it.
Rung,
Best
and
guess.
Guess what? You're even higher in
Joe's
my book,
guest.
Wesley. Absolutely.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being here, Wesley. This was really, you were great. Everybody give us a call at 215-666-0402, WIEANDlaw.com.
And for what type of cases?
Medical malpractice, any kind of catastrophic personal injury, a death because of the negligence of another, motor vehicle, anything that you have, give us a call. If you'd like me to put you in touch with Wesley, I will do so.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Kristen Buttle Show here.
What a great show.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Absolutely. Well, by the way, we're sponsored by Tony Shuler and Pinnacle Medical Plus. Nice. On behalf of Wesley and, of course, our host, Kristen Buttle, and Wes in the studio there, and Brett Cronenberger, the other fantastic producer we got here,
Thanks,
buddy.
Guys.
Have a great day, everybody.
Have a great day, everyone.
Have a great day, everybody.
AM Talk 860. Stream live at wwdbam.com.
Catch Food, Farms, and Chefs every Tuesday at 6 p.m. evening drive time on Talk Radio WWDB and WPEN HD2 97.5 FM. We have a chef.
Gene Blum, chef, bourbon, wine lover, and all-around foodie.
We have a food photojournalist.
Amaris Pollock, food photojournalist, food lover, and coming to you live on Food, Farms, and Chefs.
Food, Farms, and Chefs, 6 p.m. evening.